Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Bruce Chard, and he'll be answering your most important questions on big bonefish in the Florida Keys. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Bruce a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure to sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Bruce Chard about big bonefish in the Florida Keys. The Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida and the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout, the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and is also helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. The Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give something back to the sport that has given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. And if you're already a member, go ahead and send them a donation. For more information, you can go to the Federation website at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. Well, before we introduce Bruce, we'd like to let you know about a few of the great gifts we have to give away. And for a drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have 2 chances to win in our drawing tonight. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for that link under Bruce's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners of the drawing at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $20 gift certificate, compliments of Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado, and their website is www.frontrangeanglers.com. And we will also be giving, courtesy of Bruce Chard, one of his fly lines that is specifically made for bonefish. It's an 8-weight Bruce Chard teeny bonefish fly line, and he'll also be including with that a couple of leaders, a 10-pound and a 12-pound leader. So that's a great special giveaway we're going to do tonight on the question at the end of the show as well. So you have 2 chances to win. We'll get first prize. We'll get the Bruce Chard bonefish fly line and leaders, and second place winner will get the $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers. So to win those, you have to listen carefully because we're going to ask a question during the show, and you'll have to answer it properly at the end of the show. And the first person and second person to answer that correctly will win the 2 prizes I just mentioned. So stay tuned till the end and pay attention. Our guest tonight is Captain Bruce Chard. Bruce is a full-time Florida Keys flats guide. For over 16 years now, he's guided many anglers to their catch of a lifetime. Being a Federation of Fly Fishers Master Certified Fly Casting Instructor, Bruce has conducted and taught many of his own personal fly fishing schools internationally in the Bahamas, Guatemala, and all over the U.S. As a paid speaker at sportsman shows around the U.S., Bruce has had the opportunity to establish a working relationship with many of the largest companies in the fly fishing industry, leading to the development of Captain Bruce Chard Jim Teeny Professional Grand Slam series of fly lines. The Chard Permit Fly Line, Chard Tarpon Fly Line, and the Chard Redfish Bonefish Fly Line by Jim Teeny Company, a leader in the development of the most specialized fly lines in the world. Bruce has also been featured in many major fly fishing catalogs with Ross Reels, G. Loomis Rods, Thomas & Thomas Rod Company, Riverborne Fly Company, Jim Teeny Fly Line Company, and Yellow Dog Fly Fishing Adventures. Ross Reels has used Bruce extensively in their advertising in over 8 different fly fishing magazines and online websites. You can find Captain Bruce on the cover of 5 major fly fishing magazines, numerous fly fishing articles, and televised fly fishing shows. As a new innovative fly designer, some of Bruce's flies are being sold worldwide through Riverborne Flies. Bruce has over 27 fly patterns available through Riverborne Fly Company, ranging from bonefish, permit, and tarpon, and to tarpon flies. Many more flies are being added to the Chard collection through Riverborne every year. Look for more exciting things to come from Bruce in the future. Well, Bruce, thanks for joining us, and welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thanks for having me, Roger. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we've got a lot of material to cover tonight, and we're talking, I know you deal with a lot of different things, including tarpon and permit, but tonight we'll focus on bonefish, which I know is one of your specialties as well, and specifically in the Florida Keys. That's your home turf, correct?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Okay, well, we've got lots of questions, and we're going to talk about bonefish a little bit and the Keys. A lot of questions came in on the Keys themselves, where to fish, when to fish. We've got lots of questions on equipment, on flies, and, of course, strategies. Everybody wants to catch the big ones for some reason. I don't understand that, Bruce. You know?
I don't blame them.
You don't blame them. Okay. All right. Well, tell us just a bit about the life cycle of the bonefish in the Keys. How do they live? How do they spawn in that area? Do they migrate? What's their characteristics there?
Well, believe it or not, Roger, there really is not that much documented information on how the bonefish lives, because it's not considered an edible fish, so the government does not grant any money for studies. Only within the last 10 years has there been an organization called the Bonefish Tarpon Unlimited Organization that has developed to work on studying the bonefish and the tarpon fisheries throughout the Keys and now in the Bahamas. And the only information that I can give you on what I believe is the way the bonefish live is pretty much just what I've gathered in my daily fishing over the last 16 years. And none of this could definitely be absolute, but it's just what I've witnessed. And basically what happens is the bonefish, I believe, will spawn sometime in between March and May. And again, this is just my observations. It could be different throughout different parts of the world. That time of the year is usually when I catch bonefish that will sometimes clip eggs or some sperm out of the male. And that seems to be the most prevalent time when I notice they also seem to gang up in big schools in deeper water, which would give me the inclination that they're probably doing some sort of mating ritual there. And then I would think that once the eggs are fertilized, they will then float or either sink and end up eventually hatching, and the small bonefish would then live in the mangrove estuaries way, way, way up tight underneath the mangroves, as far away as they can get from any predators. And they then grow there in the safety of the mangrove roots and get fresh nutrients and when the tides flow in and out, especially with the incoming tide bringing the fresh nutrients in from the deeper bodies of water. And then once they get big enough, they start moving out onto the flats in the shallow water areas, probably not venturing too far from safety of the mangrove roots, where they would probably spend the majority of their life until I would say they get at least 1 pound. Then they move out and onto the flats and feed. I would say that the majority of the smaller fish live in the shallow backcountry water areas, and then once they get a little larger, I'm not sure exactly what size that would be, they would move into the deeper channels and eventually live in the deep water probably the majority of their life, only coming up onto the shallow flats then just to feed. Or okay, maybe to capture some sort of warm or cooler water temperatures on the flats, whatever that might be comforting for them.
Now, do you ever catch any, just out of curiosity, do you ever catch any of these little small bonefish fishing for other fish in the mangroves? Or?
No, I haven't. But in some of the research they've been doing with the B2, they've caught some bonefish in little gill nets and studied areas where they have found some. But, you know, in the Florida Keys, we don't necessarily have a small bonefish fishery, say an average of maybe, you know, half-pound size bones to maybe 4 or 5 pound bones.
Yeah.
They're just not prevalent here at all, where if you were to go anywhere else in the world, like Christmas Island, bones, the Bahamas, Mexico, Belize, Las Rocas, all the average size fish in those areas are under 5 pounds. And then when you come to the Keys, all the average size fish are over 5 pounds.
Mm.
So it's always been a thought that I've always had that I believe that the fish have moved over here. Once they get a certain size in Mexico or Belize or in the Bahamas, they come to the Florida Keys. This is just what I believe. This might not be true, but I believe that once they get 6-7 pounds, like I said, they have a tendency to live more in the deep water, and they will then cross the deep water, I believe, personally, and make their way over to the Florida Keys for what I believe is a very important mixture of fresh and salt water from the Everglades that creates a perfect spawning area for these big bonefish. Then again, where does the spawn actually happen, and where do the actual little bonefish go after that? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Unknown.
Kind of like a lot of these saltwater fish, not much is known, like even with tarpon and
yeah, we're trying. They're doing a lot. Yeah. Every year they're doing more, and we do we got one coming up at the end of this month. We do bonefish counts where as many guides as we can get together will count as many bones as they see on certain flats, and they gather all this information, and they try to guesstimate how many fish we have in the Keys and where the general population is strongest versus last year. And they really have learned an awful lot. And if you go to the BTU website, you can certainly read endless pages of research that they have already found out that's very interesting. But there's still a lot more to learn about these fish, for sure.
What is a trophy bonefish in the Keys?
Well, I think a trophy bonefish anywhere in the world would be, I would say, you're starting out around 10 pounds. But, of course, as you've read in articles and stuff before, that in Isla Mirada in the Florida Keys there seems to be the largest concentration of giant bonefish, where it's, I wouldn't say it's uncommon, but usually in the big bonefish tournaments, there's almost always a 13, 14, and maybe sometimes even a 15-pound bonefish that's caught.
Wow.
Up in that area.
Wow.
Yep. So there anything over 10 pounds, I would consider a trophy. Anything over 12 pounds, I would consider a spectacular fish for sure.
Now that's, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems from what I've read and heard that's what Florida's known for is big bones, not necessarily a lot of them, but big.
Absolutely. The Florida Keys is by far the best big bone fishing destination that we've found in the world so far. We don't catch a lot of fish. If you have a good angler, a really good day would catch maybe 6 or 7 bones. That would be a great day. But, you know, our average size fish is 7 to 9 pounds. And those are very large bonefish when you actually are holding one in your hands. They're gigantic. And just to give you an idea how big a 9-pound bonefish is, you know, I'm about 5'10 and weigh about 175 pounds. If I close my fist, I can almost put it in the mouth of the 9-pound bonefish.
Wow.
So how big those fish can get.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The reason why they're so big here, I believe, is the incredible growth that we have of shrimp and crabs and our estuary system here with our turtle grass flats, miles of turtle grass flats, thick turtle grass with beautiful, healthy grass, 7-8 inches long, which does nothing but grow giant shrimp. And then, you know, you might have a flat like that for 300 yards, and then all of a sudden it turns into a hard, rocky coral flat with big coral sea fans and sponges where it's just a great habitat for big crabs. And then you have those bones that can switch from giant shrimp certain times of the year to eating big blue crabs. So they have plenty to forage on, and that, I think, helps them grow quickly and big and fat on top of it.
What is the general health of the fishery in the Keys right now, specifically with bonefish?
Well, I can't really speak much for before I started fishing the Keys, but I do hear a lot of stories where, you know, of course, back in the 70s, the fishing was really, really great, and lot of the old timers say that the fishing right now is not as good as it was, but you know, our fishery, from my experience, is extremely affected by our normal weather patterns. And if you have a normal weather pattern going through where it's nice, steady weather for 2 or 3 days in a row, we have an excellent fishery. But when the weather gets tough and a little cloudy, maybe a change of wind every day, and maybe a cold front moving through, you know, it really does affect the fish, and the fish can maybe disappear for 2 or 3 days. Where if you go to the Bahamas or Belize or Mexico, where there's just a super large amount of fish, it's almost hard to not see fish over there compared to here. Our fish, I think, are very affected by the weather on a daily basis. But our fish, I think, is doing very well. On any given day, you could go out and have 20, 25 shots a day on a good day, 10 to 15 shots on a mediocre day, and less than 10 shots on a little bit of a slow day. And then some days you might go out and not see any bones. So you really have a very large mixture of opportunities catching bonefish here. But, you know, it's the fish you're going to be throwing at, they're big. And you don't get that many shots at big bonefish anywhere else in the world other than here.
Yeah. Well, Thomas Koch in Roswell, Georgia asks, what time of year is peak and what time of year is low down there? You mix in the weather and the seasons.
Sure, sure.
What's better and what's worse?
That's a great question because, in all honesty, if we have a nice weather day, any given day of the year could be a spectacular bonefish day. So our bonefish don't migrate much. They pretty much... they do move around, but they're here all year, and we could have good fishing any given day. But I would say the best average time of the year is from mid-June to mid-November. And the reason for that is that's when we have the most stable weather conditions, and the water is at its warmest point.
Isn't that when you get hurricanes?
What's that?
Isn't that the time of year you get hurricanes?
Yeah, but you know what? The fish live in the fish lives in the
he's stable. I'm going, oh, well.
yeah, because they want that warm water, and that's why they're down here and they're not, you know, up in Louisiana and those flats up there. They like the hot weather, and the hot weather is usually stable, and it's the best time of the year to fish for sure. July, August, September being my most favorite time.
Yeah. The weather, I know, is an issue down there. I mean, I've been down there fishing, and I've been down there scuba diving. I think twice I was down there, we got blown out by the wind for scuba diving because the sea was too big to take the boats out. So that's, I guess, one thing that you probably, I don't know, what's your suggestion on a length of stay down there for folks so that they do get a couple of good days out of a trip?
Well, you know, the weather is the number one difficult thing in my business. I deal with it every single day, and it's amazing because I have guys that have come for the last 3 years, and every year they've come for about four days, and every year they get, you know, really windy conditions, and I wouldn't say blown out, but pretty much blown out. And then I have other guys that every time they come for the last 3 years, it's been beautiful. And then the guys that come that had the windy weather want to change their dates to another time of the year or next year, and then they come, and then a hurricane comes. It's impossible to try to judge what's going to happen on your trip. I would just suggest that you have a very open mind and just accept the fact that if the weather is crummy when you get here, then you just make the best of it and try to deal with it. But there's no way to plan ahead of time. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
But just have an open mind when you come, and then you won't be bummed if it is kind of crummy. And it's unfortunate, but it does happen. And it happens anywhere you go. It could be blowing 30, 35 when you go to the Bahamas, Belize, Mexico, anywhere else for bonefish as well.
Sure, sure. Well, that's why I always encourage people when they haven't taken a, you know, quote, exotic trip, you know, a long trip away from home, is, you know, spend at least a week there if you can, because, you know, then if you do get a storm that lasts a day or two, you still got a few days left.
Absolutely. Finish. Of course, as much as your pocketbook can handle, a week at least would be great. But I would say the average customer comes probably four days of fishing, and you have a day of travel on either side. So that's going to be close to a week anyways. But
right. George in Alabama, you've kind of answered this, but maybe you can be specific for him. He says he'll be in the Keys in late November and in late January. What he suggests is that too cold and windy for bonefish, so I concentrate on other fish.
Well, actually, the wintertime does offer a lot of different types of fish to go for if it is cold, too cold for bone fishing when you get here. But I would suggest that it's possible you could have some of the best bone fishing of the year, especially in late January. In the Upper Keys, we have a winter bone fishery that is phenomenal. When the north winds blow out of Biscayne Bay really hard with the cold fronts, it seems to gather the fish up in big schools and push them outside on the ocean side of Key Largo. And at times you could see thousands of bonefish in one day up in that area in the wintertime. So if you have the right conditions, it could make for a great fishing trip for bonefish. And late November can be outstanding as well. If you don't have any cold fronts coming through at the time, the bonefish are feeding heavily in the shallows, you know, building as much fat up as they can for the wintertime. So they're feeding aggressively at that time also. Again, if you happen to get hit with a cold front right when you're here, it might be difficult fishing. But you have a great time to catch bonefish both of those times. And if not, you get a lot of big barracudas that come into the shallows that time of the year, and big jack crevels and cobia as well. So there can be some, and permit. Permit fishing can be very good that time of the year as well.
Great, great. Well, we need to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Bruce about big bonefish in the Florida Keys. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They also provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service, the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com, or call them at 888-994-6743. 888-994-6743. Well, you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Bruce Chard about big bonefish in the Florida Keys. If you'd like to ask Bruce a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Bruce, tell us, just give you a minute or two here to tell us what you're doing in the fly fishing world before we get back to the bonefish. I know you've got a guide service, but you're involved in a lot of things. Why don't you kind of share with us what you've been up to?
Sure. For the last 16 years, I've been a full-time Florida Keys flats guide. That has led me to a lot of sportsman shows over the years where I have met and mingled with a lot of different companies, and has led me to do an extensive amount of work with, over the last 12 years, with Ross Reels USA and now with Ross Worldwide. I do a lot of work with them on the product testing and development for their reels and their new line of Essence fly rods, which are some of the most awesome new fly rods out on the market today. And there's going to be a lot more work with Ross in the very near future, so look for advertisements for that. I also, over the last 12 years, have worked very hard to build a great fly fishing school that I share with a lot of my customers and friends and anybody else who's interested in the Bahamas. I take two or three trips a year to the Bahamas in South Andros at the Andros South Fishing Lodge, where we take the first day off of fishing and do a school for the whole group of people that come. And we go over casting and tying leaders and more casting and tying flies and then more casting. And we teach everything there is to know that you can learn about fly fishing for bonefish. And you have that readily available at your fingertips right away before you venture out and go fishing. You're going to learn everything that it's taken me 16 years to learn all in one day, and you can start applying that immediately to your fishing trip. Instead of having to learn it yourself on your own, over many years and many dollars worth of trips. So it's a great way to teach people how to fish for an individual fish quickly, and they can start gaining experience right away. I've been doing tarpon and permit schools in the Keys for years also, and now it looks like we're going to be starting up a permit school in Belize at the brand new Gartbutz Brothers Lodge in Punta Gorda. And we're going to have our first permit schools in that area next fall, so that's going to be great. We're looking forward to that. And I do a lot of work with Jim Teeny and the designing of the fly lines. The fly line designs have been extremely popular and are great for, especially for beginners, to learn how to cast the bigger flies with the longer leaders into the wind in the saltwater environment. And we just came out with a brand new bonefish permit and tarpon Bruce Chard Professional Series leaders with the Teeny Company. They're going to be hitting the stores within the next month. And we introduced them at the Fly Tackle Retailer Show in Denver 3 weeks ago, and they were a huge hit. And we're looking for big returns on that. That'll be great. And other than that, I don't want to take too much time on it. Again, guiding full-time, I guide almost 275 days a year. And in between my 3 to 4 fly fishing schools a year, I also do hosted fishing trips, anywhere from pike fishing in Canada to salmon and trout fishing in Alaska, permit fishing in Belize, sail fishing in Guatemala, and bone fishing in the Bahamas. So it keeps me busy for sure when I'm traveling and
doing like
schools and guiding. So every day I wake up has something to do with fishing somehow.
Well, sounds like a good life. Well, why don't you share your website with folks so they know where to find you and
sure, thank
find
you
out
much.
About your schools?
It's brucechard.com, www.brucechard.com. And you can contact me through that website. Any of my email and phone number and everything is there. You can surf through the many pages of information I have there about hosted trips, fly fishing schools, fishing in the Keys, general information on the fish as well that we fish for. And there's lots
great
of really cool videos and photographs on the site you really will enjoy looking at. So
terrific. Good. Okay. Well, let's get back to, glad you shared that with us, and let's get back to talking about bonefish. Next couple questions deal with places in the Keys, more specifically. Frank in Lanceville, B.C., Canada, says, and this is pretty common with a lot of us, I think, my wife is a non-fisher, and I've been looking for places to vacation. She just wants to take it easy in the sun and read, and can you recommend an area in Florida that would keep both of us happy?
Well, sure. There's I would recommend right where I live is a great area. The lower Florida Keys is probably the least populated area of the Florida Keys, and but yet it's still very close to Marathon and Key West. If you feel the desire to have a little bit of entertainment in your stay, it's not far. We're a half an hour drive either direction from that, but where we are in Big Pine, Little Torch Key area, there's a couple little resorts you can see on my website that offer exactly what you're looking for, as far as your wife can just relax by the pool or on the beach, and while you go fishing, pick you up and go fishing right from your hotel. And then if you want to venture out for any fine dining or any entertainment experiences down in Key West, and it's a very short jog, but yet you're not staying in Key West as well, where it's can be a little more city-like down there, if you know what I mean.
My experience has been that Key West doesn't have much in the way of beaches, but the further north you go, it seems like the better the beaches get if you're looking for just beaches.
Well, the main beach in the Florida Keys is the Bay of Honda State Park, and that's actually only about 5 miles from Big Pine, so it's very close. And it was rated the number one beach, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago, so it's beautiful. Lots of white sand, and it's a great place to go hang out in the sun. And there's bonefish right in front of the Bay Honda Park, too. So if you want to just go wade there, too, is a great spot to go check out for wading for bones.
Yeah, I found that, too. You know, I was down there with my wife. She doesn't fish. And we were just driving, even up in Isla Mirada and so forth. I found places to wade, and she was just happy, put out a blanket under palm tree, and she's all set. So
yeah,
lots
yeah
of places like that. Yeah,
there is.
What about, we got Thomas Koch in Roswell, Georgia again. Thomas has asked quite a few questions tonight. Where do you recognize for numbers and size? So I guess what he wants to know is, where are the most bonefish and where are the biggest bonefish?
Well, again, I would have to suggest that the lower Florida Keys gives you the most opportunities to catch big bonefish. We have numerous different types of flats. We have white sandbars interchanging with turtle grass flats, dumping into deep water channels and coming up on shallow, hard, rocky coral flats. And we have all the flats and a lot of all the different kinds of flats, which give great color and contrast to what to look at while you're fishing. It's beautiful. And it's just endless miles of great big bonefish water in the lower Florida Keys all the way to Key West. I think it's probably the best bone fishery in the Florida Keys. You can go to Isla Mirada, which has a tendency to be more bonefish than any other type of fish there, but it does not necessarily mean that you're going to have more bonefish shots than you would in the lower Florida Keys.
Okay.
So there's a lot of guys in Isla Mirada and in Marathon area that take a daily drive down to the lower Keys where they end up looking for bonefish all day down here. So if that tells you anything.
Sure. Okay, another question here, David in Brooklyn, New York, and actually Thomas has a similar question again, and also Doug McLean up in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. All are kind of asking, you know, what is the accessibility, and, you know, what are your suggestions for a bare bones, David says, no pun intended, low-budget Keys trip? Is camping an option? Do you recommend a guide? What recommends for a do-it-yourself trip? Those are all kind of wrapped together there.
Well, those are great questions because that's exactly how I made it to the Keys. My first time I had a friend of mine bring me down and we camped out at the Long Key State Park. And right there off the Long Key State Park, you can set up tent in a little campsite area and walk about 15 feet to the bonefish flat. And there's bonefish prevalent at times all the way up and down the flat there. And it's a great place to, you know, spend $20 a night camping. If you're able to do it, a little kayak, if you were able to bring a little kayak down, is really, really helpful as well. You can hit a lot of different areas with a kayak by dumping in by one of the bridges or any shallow water access alongside the road. You can dump your little kayak in and go kayaking along the flats and looking for bonefish as well. But
and you can see well enough from a kayak to spot.
Yeah, well,
fish.
Basically what you're going to be doing is you're going to be looking for tailing fish. So you'll be in super shallow water, and you'll be looking for tailing fish. But you can also use the kayak to, you know, to maybe cross a deep water channel or something, get on the flat on the other side, and then you can start waiting for the bones as well. And you can look for cruisers that way also. Something to think about. But there are lots of places to wade in the Keys. Not as many as you might think, but we have two state parks. We have three state parks, but two are accessible for bone fishing. We have the Pennekamp State Park up in Key Largo. And we have the Long Key State Park and the Bayahana State Park. And both the Long Key and the Bayahana Parks are great for wading for bonefish. They all have low cost campsites. The only thing I would suggest is it's difficult to camp down here in the summertime, which seems to be our consistent bonefish weather. You know, it's 90, 95 degrees and 100% humidity. And someone coming down from Canada would about kill themselves sleeping in a tent. at time of the year. Now, a lot of people come down in the wintertime here, which is great, but it leaves for probably an evening-type bone fishery to fish because in the mornings the water temperatures are usually a little cool for the bonefish liking, so they'll come up in the evening time only usually. Something to consider at the time of the year if you're coming. But, you know, in this late summer, early fall, the hotels here are very inexpensive. The prices go down a lot, so it's a great time to be here for bone fishing. Nobody is here fishing, so hiring a guide is very easy and easy to find some of the best guides that time of the year. And I would highly recommend at least one day of guided fishing if you can pull it off financially, because the amount of information that you are going to learn from a guide in one day is so valuable to make your whole trip worthwhile coming down here. It really is key, especially if you've never done it before. If you have experience in bone fishing, you could probably get away from you could probably get away with having to hire a guide and you know, fish close to the road and areas where you don't need a boat. But I'll be honest with you, if you have a guide, you're gonna see the real keys that way, because he's gonna take you deep into the backcountry and looking at all the different kinds of flats and the different fisheries that we have in the back. It's really worthwhile.
Great, yeah. It's usually the case, you know, learn a little bit and then...
Well, you know, I've done a lot of fishing and a lot of trout fishing, almost every type of fishing I've done, and I never travel anywhere without a guide, without hiring guides, because I just don't have time. I don't have time to learn the fishery of that certain area.
Right.
I just want to try to take advantage of what time off I have as much as I can. So make sure...
Well, here's a question from Thomas Koch, and I'm probably destroying his last name, but anyway, and in Roswell, Georgia again. And you, sounds like you know about both these places, but he says, why go to Florida when I can go to the Bahamas for the same or less money and better fishing? You might want to argue that point, but...
Oh, that's a great point. The Bahamas have the best bone fishing in the world, bar none. There's no questions at all. But I don't think you're going to catch fish as big as the Florida Keys bonefish. There's no way. The average bone, like I said earlier, in the Bahamas is under 5 pounds. You get anything over 5 pounds in the Bahamas, it's considered a great fish, and it is. But the Keys bonefish are huge. And you have to make a good presentation with the Florida Keys bonefish to catch one, so they're a little more difficult to catch. You can't get away with hitting them on the head like you can in the Bahamas sometimes, and they spin around backwards and do a backflip and eat your fly and take off. So I would recommend that you go to the Bahamas for sure if you don't have a lot of experience, and gather as much experience as you can, and then I would definitely give it a shot in the Florida Keys for sure if you feel that you're ready, and take advantage of catching some really big bones. So both the fisheries are excellent, and I would never pump one more than the other. They're both great, and they both have their pluses and minuses. But you know, the bone fishing in the Bahamas is excellent. It's the best in the world by far. You get more fish and more shots, and you gain lots of experience quickly, which is why I do my bonefish school there. It's great for beginners to go there, and they get lots of experience quickly, and have a chance of catching lots of fish. But most of them are very small, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. You can have a great time. You can use a 6 or 7 weight rod in the Bahamas and just have a hoot. But it's kind of like joining the NFL when you come to the Florida Keys. You're going to get what you pay for. It's the big bones of the Florida Keys is doesn't get any better than this. It's
yeah. Well, I think you just answered
challenging but very rewarding.
I think you just answered Charles' question from Maryland. Do you think bonefish in the Keys are tougher to catch than the Bahamas? And I think you just answered that.
Yeah, there's no doubt. The pressure in the Bahamas is nowhere near what it can be in the Keys, but yet again, that has nothing to do with why the bonefish are difficult here. They're just big, and there's not as many opportunities to catch bones in the Keys as there is in the Bahamas. I mean, in the Bahamas, it's nothing to go out and catch 20 bones a day sometimes. It's just really, really good fish in there. And it's a great place to go, but we just don't have that many fish here.
Yeah.
But our fish are a lot bigger.
Big, yep.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about equipment here for a few minutes. A couple questions from Thomas in Roswell, Georgia, and Frank in Lansville, B.C. Both would like to know about your recommendations for rods and line. Frank specifically says, I have 8-weight rods and reels that seem to work elsewhere where they'd be fine in Florida for throwing the larger flies.
Yes, the 8-weight's fine. If you do get into a larger flies and heavier winds, I've noticed that many anglers have a much easier time casting a 9-weight line, or with a 9-weight rod. So that's definitely an option, but would you have to go out and buy a 9-weight rod if you don't have one? Probably not. You can definitely get away with the 8-weight line for sure. no problem at all. I personally like throwing a 6 or 7 weight in the Bahamas. And then in the Keys, I'll throw an 8 or 9 weight. Like, so on a calmer day, maybe 10 to 15 miles an hour or less wind, I'll throw an 8-weight, no problem. And then when it gets heavy winds, maybe 15 miles an hour and up to 25 to 30 miles an hour, we'll throw a 9 and even sometimes a 10-weight if it's really, really windy. The 10-weight just helps us to, to get a little farther cast into the wind and lay out that leader a little easier with that heavy fly into that heavy, heavy wind.
Frank also asked about lighter weight rods. Is there any reason to bring anything less than an 8 weight?
The keys, probably not. You can definitely get away with a 7 weight in the keys for sure. Shallow water tailing fish is excellent with a 7 weight rod. You're using lighter weighted flies for the shallow water, so you can definitely throw a 7 weight on a calm night. It would be great. So I would recommend that too. Just make sure that your reels have enough backing and a good drag system, and you're ready to go.
What about lines? I don't think you want to use any of those teeny lines down there, do you?
You mean the teeny thing?
That was a joke. What kind of lines do you use? Floating lines or
They're all floating lines, yep. And, you know, the water depth that we fish is anywhere from 6 inches to, 3 to 4 feet, depending in the wintertime when they go deep in mud in the deep water grass area. So any of that water depth can be covered with just a variation of weight on the fly itself.
What makes, because it sounds like you've had such a close involvement with the developing of these tropical lines, what makes them different? What makes them better than, you know, for people that fish for trout and stuff, what makes these lines better for salt and the warm?
Well, there's a couple main things that makes the saltwater lines different than the freshwater lines, and that is the core of the fly line. The core of most freshwater trout fishing lines and salmon fishing lines are made out of multi-filament, maybe like a Dacron or a Micron type material. That's the core. And that allows it to be very flexible and loose and limp, especially when it gets very cold. When you take a saltwater fly line that has a monofilament core, which is either usually a braided monofilament core or a single strand monofilament core, if you bring that into the cold weather or the cold water temperatures, it will stiffen up. And it's very difficult to cast and straighten out, and it kinks a lot. So it's designed to entail the large amount of heat that will build up on the deck of the boat and the warmer water temperatures, and that helps to keep it more limp in the salt water, and also stiff enough to carry nice tight loops and carry the weight of the heavy fly with a long leader in the strong wind. So also the saltwater fly lines have a tendency to be much more bumpy, or they have a rougher, coarser coating on the outside, and this helps to shoot the line farther, since many of the shots that you're going to take in the tropics are going to be somewhat of a distance cast, where you need to shoot some line into the wind or downwind to get the fly where you want it to be. So those are probably two of the main characteristics of a saltwater line versus a freshwater line.
Charles in Maryland wants to know your opinion on furled leaders.
No, it's not practical in the Florida Keys. You can certainly use them if you'd like to. It's just not practical. We don't use them here. Basically, we use a tapered leader, say 30 pounds to 20 pounds to 15, and then you put your tippet down, maybe 13 or 10-pound tippet on the end and tie the fly to the end, and you're good to go, and that ranges anywhere from 10 to 12, 13 feet of leader. And that seems to be the basic leader that we use for bone fishing and red fishing and any of that type of basic saltwater flats fishing down here.
Pretty simple, because you don't need chalk tippet or anything for the bone fish.
No, none of that. So pretty easy going.
Do you, when you're tying your flies on, are you using a loop connection there? Is that important?
Well, you know, Roger, I personally like to use a loop knot myself, but that's one of those things that's a personal preference. Some guys would like to use a knot that will go cinch up tight to the eye. I like a loop knot. It gives you a little extra movement on the fly. And what I believe is the most important factor of the loop knot is when you stop stripping the fly, the weight of the eyes of the fly will dip down, and the loop knot allows the fly to hinge and dive straight down, which gives a somewhat of a jigging action to the fly, if you will. And the one thing that a bonefish doesn't want to do is lose their prey. Because when a shrimp or a crab is swimming and they see the bonefish, the only thing they can do is dive in a hole or get down in the grass and try to hide as quickly as they can. So when the bonefish see that shrimp or that crab dive to the bottom, or even the fly, just dive immediately to the bottom, I think it turns them on to come over and eat the fly right away because they don't want to miss it. And if you have a knot, if you use a knot that cinches to the eye of the hook straight, it's very difficult for the fly to hinge down and dive straight. It kind of just sinks flat to the bottom, if you will.
Less natural movement.
Yes, that's right. So I've found that a loop knot is superior than to any other knot.
Well, Bruce, a couple other things about equipment. You mentioned a reel with a good drag system and lots of backing. Anything other specifications you'd like to talk about there?
Sure. Well, I'm sure everybody's now heard of the large arbor reels. Those are excellent as long as they are a true large arbor reel. That would allow them to recover fly line quickly, because once you hook a bonefish, depending on the size, they might run anywhere from 50 feet to 250 feet in about 10 to 15 seconds. They're spectacular fish to catch on a fly. Once you hook one, they take off, and they're just a great sport fish. But what happens is a lot of times they'll make that first initial long bursting speeding run, and then they'll stop, and they'll turn around 200 yards out from you and come right back at you. And if you don't have the speed and the ability to recover that line quickly, you could get slack buildup in your line, and therefore the fish could possibly spit the hook out on you. So you always want to stay tight to the fish. And to help you do that, a large arbor reel will help you to crank in the line very quickly and hopefully stay tight to the fish so you don't lose them. So that's one of the... Go ahead.
Okay, go. Well, I was going to ask specifically about that. When a fish is coming back at you, is it faster to reel or is it faster to strip?
Well, you know what, Roger? Sometimes you might not be able to strip because you have backing out. And you certainly do not want to, if the fish comes back at you, you don't want to find yourself putting the backing in your stripping finger and stripping the line back in, because if he starts to take off again, he could come tight and pull the line through your hands, and you won't be able to put tension on the backing very easily because it's so small and thin it could cut your finger. So if he does do that and slack is starting to build up, you can do one thing I think is a great thing to do, and that is stick your rod tip in the water. Because if you get too much slack buildup and your rod tip will straighten since there's no pressure, and you're trying to reel very quickly, your rod tip will shake vigorously in the air, therefore throwing backing around in loops, possibly wrapping around your tip top. And then once the fish ends up coming tight again, he'll come tight against the backing wrapped around your tip and possibly break off. So if you at this point in time, you can see fish is coming back quicker than you can gain line. Therefore, you just simply put your rod tip under the water. Therefore, you can reel as quickly as you can without the rod tip shaking because it's got pressure against the water. And the fly line or the backing will not have a chance to wrap around your tip at all. And therefore, all the fly line and backing is then in the water while the fish is moving. So remember, the fish, if he's coming back at you and all the line is in the water, the bonefish is creating tension by moving through the water and it's having to drag the weight of the fly line and the backing through the water as well. So the more line that you have in the water at that time, if he's coming back at you, is actually beneficial to you. Now, once you
come... actually using the water as a pressure leverage.
That's correct. To stay tight to the fish. And then once you finally can reel up quick enough to come back tight to the fish, you can then raise your rod tip back out of the water, and hopefully the water is not too shallow at that time where you might get caught on a sponge or a piece of coral or something. If so, then obviously we'll have to attend to whatever circumstances have happened since then, but you'd almost assuredly get yourself in trouble, though, with the slack line in the air. Granted, sometimes when you hook a fish right away and you're trying to clear the fly line onto the reel, the fish might run a quick 30 feet and then change direction and come back the other way. and trying to stay tight, then you would definitely want to try to strip your line as quickly as you can, because you can gain more line quickly, obviously, stripping and staying tight while trying to clear your fly line. So that would be a good method at that time as well.
Have to have that experience on the water to figure all this out, don't you?
Yeah, but you know what? If you didn't have someone like me telling you this, you wouldn't know to apply that. And now you know you can apply that right away without having to wait 3 years to figure it out on your own.
Yeah. No, I think that's very good tips you just gave. What Cy asks here about polarized sunglasses on the flats and wanting to know what colors are best for clear and cloudy days.
Sure. Well, in my experience, Cy, I like for cloudy days, I've found that the yellow lenses work very well. Some people don't like to wear the yellow lenses. They just don't, their eyes just don't work very well. So, the key thing that I always try to tell everybody is when you're fishing the flats, you want as much light as you can get. You don't want to block out any light. You just want to have the polarization and you want to have as much light as you can get. So any of the lighter colored tints on any of the sunglasses are great. A light amber, or maybe a light rose or a vermilion type color, or light copper color works very well. The yellow lenses seem to work better in the clouds, but you can also still get away with a light amber or the light copper in the clouds as well. But just remember that you want the polarization on the glasses to create contrast in the colors of the bottom and the fish. So, and also to cut down the glare, of course, of the sun and the clouds. So those are essential. Anything light in color. If you have, like, the dark gray lenses, the dark browns or dark gray polarized lenses have a tendency to block too much light, therefore making the contrast nowhere near as strong, and it makes it impossible if any cloud comes over to see anything, because just those darker lenses don't let any light in at all. So a personal preference, I believe. And it's a personal preference on lens colors, but I would stick with lighter color lens for sure.
Okay. What about if you're going to do some wading down there, suggestions for footwear? I know I've seen a lot of different types of things that people wear.
Sure. Well, I personally like, they're kind of like what they call aqua socks. It's like a neoprene sock with a hard bottom, and they're easy to slip on and out. And I really like wearing those. Sometimes you'll find yourself, especially if you're in the Bahamas, getting some sand sometimes caught in there. So just wear a pair of socks with those. Sometimes works great. They have some of the lace-up boots that work great. They're indestructible, but they're very heavy. And if you have to go out on a flat of any size, it would be extremely difficult to wade for any long time flats without getting very tired or fatigued with the big heavy boots. But they're pretty indestructible. Sometimes, especially in the Bahamas and in the Keys, there's a lot of hard, rocky areas that have sharp edges and coral. So whatever shoes you end up getting for wading, I would recommend that you make sure that they have a very hard sole, because even some of the aqua socks can be difficult to comfortable in on those really hard, rocky flats, because that you can still feel the penetration through the soles. Just make sure they're very thick and have good protection on the bottoms, and you're good to go. Again, that's a personal preference on the shoes. Like I said, I like the little aqua sock ones. Some guys prefer the big lace-up boots, but they're all just fine. Whatever you can find is comfortable for you will work just fine.
Okay, let's talk about flies. We had lots of questions on flies. Let me take just a quick break, and then we'll come right back and jump into those. Flats Time Charters is your sponsor for this segment of the show, and Captain Bob Jaspers of Flats Time Charters will introduce you to the Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River, and No Motor Zone of the Banana River on the east coast of Central Florida. Only a short drive from Orlando, you will sight fish, big redfish, spotted sea trout, and black drum, as well as the seasonal snook and tarpon. Captain Bob is a lifetime resident of the area, and it shows in his knowledge of the local fish, flora, and fauna. Call Flats Time Charters now and arrange your next memorable adventure. You can reach Captain Bob Jaspers at 321-631-4051. That's 321-631-4051, or go to his website at www.flatstime.com. That's FLATSTIME.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Bruce Chard about bonefish in the Florida Keys. If you'd like to ask Bruce a question, go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use our Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll try to answer your question immediately as when we receive them. Okay, Bruce, you had mentioned already a lot of the things that the bonefish eat. Crabs, shrimp seem to be their primary diet. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. G. Kachik in Pittsburgh wants to know, if you had one bonefish fly for the lower keys, what would you use?
Well, I personally like a banded snapping shrimp fly. It's basically a tan craft fur with some brown marking on it and somewhat of a brown body. Could be anything. Some brown chenille would be fine. And then maybe a little bit of root beer sparkle on top of that with some lead eyes, maybe some size small lead eyes. And that with some chartreuse thread and a little loop knot on your leader would probably catch you bonefish almost anywhere in the world, to be honest with you. I would tie that on a size 1/0 hook or a size maybe 1 or 2 in the Keys, and obviously size 4s and 6s and 1s in the Bahamas as well.
Okay, so that's the go-to fly. Ed in Massachusetts and Martin in Lawrence, Kansas, both ask about your favorite fly. So what would be your next several flies that you would go to or like to have in your box?
Well, when I'm fishing for tailing bonefish in the Florida Keys, I love to throw a fly that's called the Chardy Choker Crab. It's a big deer hair profiled crab that is easy for the fish to see when they're in shallow water digging around in the turtle grass. When you strip the fly, it's got a large profile and it moves lots of grass and it's easier for the fish to see. Like I said earlier, with a 9-pound bonefish, you can almost put your fist in it, in its mouth. You know, these fish are eating big, anything they can get in their mouth, eating big shrimp and big crabs. So to throw, you know, to throw a fly that's 3 inches long to one of these bonefish is actually very inviting. You know, a number of the shrimp that we get in the wintertime here, live shrimp, are almost 6-7 inches long. They're big shrimp. And when we throw one of those at the bonefish, it's all, man, they can't even see straight. They see that thing, they come running from miles and eat it right up in no time. So we're not throwing flies even half as big as those shrimp, and they're eating them no problem at all. So I would recommend a large profile deer hair choker crab or any of the merkins. You can use a merkin. They love merkins and big oversized gotchas. Gotchas are just not for the Bahamas. They eat them everywhere, so they're very good in the Keys as well. Any type of mantis shrimp fly. Basically, bonefish are very opportunistic. They'll eat anything as long as you present the fly correctly. So if the fly is presented correctly and it looks like a prey swimming away, usually they're not too picky to come over and take a nibble.
Ed in Massachusetts again asks, you'll take a look at his fly selection, and you can see this on your question sheet here. Can you kind of scan down that and tell him if these are good flies to have in his box? You just mentioned
that. I looked at that, and those are all good flies to have. Like I said, the fish are, as long as the fly is in front of them and presented nicely, it's good. So the key thing to think about is if depending on how deep of the water you're fishing, you need your fly to get to the bottom within 2 to 3 seconds. So you want to see how much current you have. You want to see how deep the water is. And you want to drop your fly straight off the front of you, whether you're wading or whether you're on the boat, and make sure that the fly rides correctly and that it sinks to the bottom within 2 to 3 seconds. And if you can do that, then you're going to be able to imitate the bait correctly once you get the fly in front of the fish. That's some of the things I look at. So you definitely want to have a range of flies with bead chain eyes to somewhat of a heavy, like say a medium lead eye. Therefore, you can cover all the ranges of water depth that you might encounter. And I'm looking here, a size 2 merkin crab left. Yeah, all those crab, all those flies are going to work just fine for you, Ed.
Let me just read off a few of those because other people aren't seeing what we're seeing.
Okay,
we've got down there Crazy Charlies, tan and pink and white.
Yeah, those will work great.
These Gotcha, tan, pink, and white.
Yeah, the Gotchas are deadly everywhere you go, and I would have a large variety of Gotchas in different sizes and weights. And you can cover all of all these flies. I would have a variety of different sizes and weights.
He keeps mentioning twos and fours here. Is that
twos and fours are great? That's a great average size. You could use the twos in the Keys, and you can use the fours in the Bahamas. No problem. That'd be great. The
also got the Merkin crab and the Whisper crab.
Yep, those
are raghead crab.
Those are both great. All those are great flies, and they will all work great. Size 4 raghead crab, that's great. That'll work fine. Size 2 whisper crab is great as well. But with the bead chain eyes, you're probably going to use that for a shallow water tailing fish. Again, once you drop the whisper crab with the bead chain eyes in the water, again, you want to make sure it gets to the bottom within 2 or 3 seconds. If it does, then you're good. If it doesn't, you might want to put a heavier fly on. But
when you have your flies in your box and you've got a whole bunch of Crazy Charlies in there or whatever, how do you separate them somehow by weight? Because I know many times it's hard for me to tell in my hand whether they're actually that much heavier than the other.
Well, you can look at the fly itself, Roger, and see if it has bigger lead eyes than the other fly next to you. You can certainly separate them and organize them in your fly box any way you feel necessary. There's no trick. There's no real rules, but you can do whatever you like and whatever's comfortable for you, and you should be able to tell the difference of the weight of the fly by feeling it, and if you can't, you should definitely see it by looking at it. If one's got a much heavier-looking lead eye than the other one, obviously that one's probably going to be heavier. So, and the bead chain ones are going to be lighter than the lead eyes as well. So,
but you're primarily weighting with the eyes rather than any internal weight?
Yeah, the hook... The hook actually does, I don't think personally, adds much weight to the fly. Of course, if you have a bigger hook, it's going to weigh a little more than, you know, size 2 is going to weigh more than the size 4. But you're also going to have the whole fly tied in proportion to the size of the hook. So a size 2 fly should be bigger all the way around than the size 4 fly. And
I mean, you don't wrap any lead underneath bodies or so forth to...
You can. That's a personal preference. If you're a fly tire, you can. It's probably not necessary. You can get away with all the water depth columns that you're going to be fishing for bonefish with just tying lead eyes or a bead chain or no eyes at all, depending on how shallow water you're fishing.
All right. Any particular tips you can give us on caring for flies? I know the salt water is much more abusive than fresh water.
Sure. Well,
here.
I'll be honest with you. Once you put a fly in the salt water, you can pretty much just kiss it goodbye. you can use it over and over again for a number of days, but it probably would not last if you put it back into your fly box for more than a couple of days before you would start seeing corrosion and rust build up on the hook. If you know that you're not going to use that hook again that fly within the next couple of days, don't even bother putting it back into your fly box because it's gonna corrode and leach off into the other flies as well. So I would definitely keep your flies that you've already used in a different box and keep them away from your freshly unused flies because any of the salt water will really attack those flies quickly.
And obviously don't drop the box in the water, right?
Yeah,
and you're throwing your whole box out. It sounds like so.
It'd be expensive. I mean, if you take meticulous care of your fly and dip it in fresh water and dry it off with a towel every time after you use it, which nobody does, but you can do that, and you can make the fly last longer for sure. But it's almost not worth the extra maintenance to keep it going. But it will inevitably get eaten up for sure eventually. So.
Yeah. Some questions here on strategies and presentation. Jim in Washington, D.C. and Martin in Lawrence, Kansas are looks like, for some tips for inexperienced anglers and casting tips to tune up for coming down to fish for bonefish. Can you give us some tips or suggestions for those kinds of
things? Absolutely. Here's the most important thing that I believe a caster needs to get to a level of understanding: loop control. Loop control is so key in all of fly casting, especially in the tropics. If you can stand up and you can make a tight loop whenever you want, and then open the loop a little wider whenever you want, and then make a wide loop whenever you want, then I believe that you're able to be successful in the tropics. So what I would recommend when you practice, and I do mean practice, because the more you practice, the better you're going to be able to cast, and the better you're going to be able to cast, the more fish you're going to catch. So it really does make a difference. The more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. So don't be afraid to practice a lot, especially right before you travel on a trip. But practice throwing tight loops. And the tight loops is essential to casting distance and being accurate, which is what you need in the saltwater. Once you're comfortable casting tight loops, then you need to work on line speed or tempo of your cast. Don't change anything. Continue throwing the tight loop, but do it quickly and do it with a lot of power. As much power as you can put into the rod, especially. If you find yourself on a 20-mile-an-hour wind day, there is not enough power in your body that you can use to make the fly go out. You're going to need every inch of every bit of power you can put into the cast to lay out a 50-foot shot into the wind and catch that fish that's upwind of you. So if you do not have a tight loop and you cannot throw a tight loop consistently and you go to the tropics, you will find out quickly how difficult it is to lay out a cast into the wind, because the wider the loop that you have casting into the wind, the more difficult it is to get any distance or accuracy and control over your line at all. And the number one thing in saltwater fishing is try to keep slack line out of your cast and out of your presentation at all times. So every time you lay out the fly, our object is to get it to lay out straight. Leader straightens out and the fly lays out straight every time, if you can, at any angle with the wind. And the only way to do that is with a tight loop. You have to have a tight loop. And if you don't, practice hard until you feel comfortable casting a tight loop. And then, like I said, add in the speed and the tempo and aggressiveness of the cast, and you'll be able to catch fish with that combo in any tropical area for sure. Now, there's, of course, more advanced techniques that we can go over, and if you want me to do that, we can. Just let me know.
But, all about casting?
Yeah, so those are the basic casting instructions I would give to someone.
Yeah, I think for most people, at least my suggestion is, go get an instructor, a certified instructor like you are, and get tuned up. I know I did before I went down there. It made all the difference in the world.
Well, you know, you got to figure that if you're spending all the money on the airfare and the time and you're not working and vacation time to go down there and you really want to catch a fish, you know, a little extra time spent with an instructor is so valuable. Like you said, it's very, very key and very important to be able to get yourself to a level where you can feel comfortable casting in the environment that we have down here. It's very, very unforgiving at times. The fish, you know, will come into the zone that you can cast only for a short time, sometimes for only 4 or 5 seconds, and you have to be able to get the fly there right away, or else he swims away and you miss the shot. It's not like when you're trout fishing where the fish is stuck behind the rock and he's not going anywhere because he lives right there all day long, and you can throw every fly in your fly box at him if you want. The time factor is very key. It's there's a fish, 10 o'clock, 50 feet, cast right now. Oh, too late, he's gone. So it can be that quick. So you definitely
hear that a lot.
Yeah. You definitely want to be able to take advantage of every opportunity that you can. But the key thing to remember, too, is that as long as you're happy with yourself and your outcome of your trip, then there's no problem. Nobody cares how good of a caster you are or how many fish you catch other than you. So if you're personally satisfied with how you cast and how your success of catching fish and you're happy with it, then that's great. That's what it's all about. But if you want to improve, then there's definitely, you know, just put some more time in and study and read more books and videos and get an instructor and do as much as you can to improve, and you'll see your catch ratio go up for sure. I guarantee it.
We had a couple of questions here. Greg in Rapid City, South Dakota, Doug up in Calgary again, asking about the depth of the water that you normally fish. Maybe you can just briefly talk about that and then talk about, you know, your presentation techniques. You know, when you spot a bone, what do? How do you present to them?
Sure. Well, again, whenever you start fishing, you want to make sure you check and see how deep the water is, whether you're in the boat or wading. It could be anywhere from in the Bahamas fishing for fish that are ankle-deep water. Even in the Keys, you get fish that are just a little bit over ankle-deep water, 4 or 5 inches of water. And you might find yourself fishing out of a boat in the wintertime to fish that could be 4, maybe even 5 feet of water. So, like I said, you want to be prepared for any of those water depths. And the presentation certainly is different for each of those different water depths. And I'm going to go over that right now. So if you're in shallow water and it's a calm weather condition, the fish are going to be a little spooky for a couple reasons. One, they're in super shallow water, and it's very calm. So they're very sensitive to any noise or anything. So what you're going to want to do is make sure you lead the fish and cross the fish. You always have to create an intercept with the fish. So if you try to throw to the fish directly, you'll most likely land the fly too close to the fish and therefore spook them out. So you always want to throw out in front or lead the fish, and then you want to cross the fish's path as well. So say, let's just for an example, you're going to cast 10 feet out in front of the fish. You're going to lead them 10 feet, and then you're going to cross them another 5 feet. Therefore, you're giving yourself the opportunity to strip the fly and get it in the fish's zone as the fish swims towards your leader and your fly. Ideally, you don't want to let the fish get in between you and the fly. Therefore, the fish will see the fly coming at him, and that will be unnatural. So he would most likely spook from that. So you want to cast, lead the fish, and cross him, and then strip the fly and get it in front of his path. So when he gets close to the fly, you can start stripping long and slow strips. The shallower the water, the longer and the slower the strips should be, I believe personally. The reason for that is, you know, you got to picture yourself swimming in 5 inches of water. You can't see very far because the water depth is very, very low. They're very shallow. So your ability to see far is already hindered for the bonefish. So if you strip the fly maybe 4 feet in front of him too quickly, it will immediately get out of his zone and, you know, very low odds of him seeing the fly. So you'll have to strip very long, slow, keep the fly in the zone as long as you can. And therefore, if the fish does see something moving or crawling slowly away, he's not startled by it. So anything too quick in that shallow water will definitely scare off the bonefish as well, because it's not natural for him to see something darting around too quick. So shallow water fish in calm conditions will call for a shot like that. Now, shallow water, same type of conditions, other than maybe the wind is blowing very hard and it's still very shallow, it'll allow you to cast much closer and present the fly to the fish much closer if you need to. But a lot of times you don't need to, because the fish will be feeding up a certain edge, and you can just time that out just right, and you can still lead them 10 feet and cross them 5 feet and wait for the fish to come to you and then strip the fly across the front of his nose very easily. No problem at all. So when you get a little deeper water, now you have to worry about, say, 2 feet of water. Now you have to worry about some water flow and current, what direction the fish is moving in, how fast the fish is moving in that water depth, and you have to then present the fly accordingly. So the faster the fish is moving, the more you're going to need to lead the fish. But you don't want to cross them too much more, because you still have to give yourself that time to get the fly in front of the fish. If the fish is moving slowly, then you can lead them a lot closer, and therefore reducing the odds of the fish maybe swimming towards you or away from the fly or turning around, which would then lose your opportunity of that shot. Ideally, your first shot at the fish is you want to be your best shot. So every time you have to pick up and make another cast after your first shot, your odds go down and down every time you have to make another cast. So ideally, you want to try to make that first shot count to give yourself the best odds possible of catching the fish. So sometimes you'll be fishing in, you know, for mudding fish in 4 or 5 feet of water, And again, you have to judge the current and whether the fish are moving into the current or down current with the current or sideways of the current. And you have to judge how fast the actual bonefish is swimming in order to know how much to lead the fish to give the fly a chance to not only get in front of the fish, but now you have to give the fly time to sink and get down to the water level of the fish. So you have to calculate that as well. So sometimes you might find yourself leading a bonefish 15 to 20 feet and crossing them another 10 feet. Make sure that you get the fly enough time to sink down in that 4 or 5 feet of water through the heavy current and get down in front of the fish so when you start to move the fly, it's in front of the fish for a good presentation. Once you get used to all these different scenarios, which...
Once you get used to all these scenarios.
Yeah, yeah, you'll... Which could happen quickly, believe it or not.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll be able to take full advantage of every opportunity, and it will come second nature to you. No, for sure. Once you just got to get a little bit of experience under your belt. But
yeah,
all of that
yeah.
said, going back Fine. To the earlier question, it's imperative to get a guide to help you guide
yeah, there you
your way
go.
Through this quickly. Otherwise, it's going to take you years to learn all this.
Yeah, timing is everything. Well, we've got time for one more question. You have to make a pretty quick answer, but Scott, this is from Don Memmer in Hilo, Hawaii. So, aloha, Bruce. I sell your teeny permit line out here in Hawaii. The guys love it for those windy conditions. His question is, how do you handle sight casting those big 10-pound bones? Out here in Hawaii, we get some real monsters, but you just can't help but get the shakes when you're trying to lead a fish that size.
Yeah.
Any pointers in those situations?
Well, you know, believe it or not, I have some friends that have fished Hawaii for bonefish, and they are very big there. And there's not a lot of places to fish for them there, but they are pretty big. The biggest thing I can say is experience will take care of that. The more bonefish you've thrown at and the more bonefish you've caught, you will learn to harness that excitement and tone it down to where you can take a couple deep breaths, relax, focus on taking the shot, and working on a big bone. It's for sure when you see a big bonefish on the flat that's bigger than normal, you certainly get buck fever, if you will. And it's very common. But you know what? The second that you don't get excited, you need to quit because that's what it's all about. You know, when you see those big fish, you get excited. And if you can harness your excitement just long enough to make one good cast with the right presentation, you'll catch that fish.
Well, it's time to wrap things up. We've run out of time. Of course, there's always more questions to ask, Bruce, but we have to wrap it up. Folks, if you'll just stick with us a few more minutes, we'll do our drawings here and also give away Bruce's bonefish line. So stick with us, and we'll do that in just a minute. Family Ties. Family Ties, and that's T-Y-E-S, is an organization that uses shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website, www.familyties, that's family and then T-Y-E-S.com, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. But just a reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section for the show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. Well, now it's time to give away the prizes. Winners of our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. And if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late, but you can do so for our next show. You don't want to miss out on any of the chances to some of the great prizes that we do give away. If you're the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show to provide you with the information on how to receive your gift. So the first thing we're going to give away is a 3-year membership to Federation of Fly Fishers. And to learn more about the FFF, you can go to the Federation's website, which is www.fedflyfishers.org. That's fedflyfishers.org. Great organization to support. So we'll check our database here, and the winner of this is Treg Owings. Treg Owings in Idaho. So, Treg, congratulations. A 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. So I know you'll enjoy that. Well, now we'll give away 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, and you can learn more about Fly Fusion at www.flyfusionmag.com. A great magazine out of Calgary, Canada, lots of beautiful photography and great how-to articles. And our winner for that will be Vito. And Vito, I'm not going to even try your last name, but Vito in New Jersey. So otherwise, I'm sure I'd just destroy your last name. But congratulations, Vito, and enjoy that subscription. I know you will. Bruce, thanks so much for being with us and sharing all your great knowledge with us. I surely enjoyed it, and I learned a lot, and I'm sure everybody else did. And hopefully we can do it again. Maybe we'll talk about permit or tarpon next time. I know those are two of your loves as well.
Sounds great. I would like to do that. Thank you very much.
Well, great. Well, our next broadcast will be on October 15th at 7 p.m. Mountain Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, we will interview Bill Edrington. And our topic for the show will be fishing wet flies. Old school still works. Bill Edrington knows what works, and one of those things that is fly fishing with wet flies for trout. So if you haven't been using wet flies, this show will be very enlightening and may just change the way you fish in the future. We'd like to thank Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Royal Gorge Anglers, Housatonic River Outfitters, and Flats Time Charters for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think our company would benefit from sponsoring one of your shows, give us a call at 1-888-961-1115, extension 2. And we'll be happy to explain the options available to you. That's 888-961-1115, extension 2. Don't forget to visit our website and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.